You are listening to a Banzai Retro Club podcast. Language and topics may not always be appropriate for younger listeners. Press 1 for a groovy topic from the 1970s. Press 2 for an awesome topic from the 1980s. Or press 3 for a slamming topic from the 1990s. Please choose now. Too late. We have made your selection for you. Let's start the show.
So how did you think, what made you think of contacting me for this interview? This is super cool. Where did I come up?
This is where Dave comes in.
This is totally where I come in. What had happened is I have, this is going to give you some back history on the podcast. How much time do you have for us, by the way?
I have a lot of time. Like, I could do an hour.
Okay. All right. So, well, very cool.
Are we taping now? I figured we might be, but I just didn't know.
Yeah. Actually, we are. We always start rolling right away.
Cool.
But just in case.
Yeah. But if there's ever anything that you're like, you know what, I don't want you to include that, then just tell us and we'll edit it out.
Got it. Okay.
All right.
Nope.
Do you want to actually officially like start the show and introduce and do that stuff, Dave?
You know, actually, that's a good point. We could do that and then go into the story of why I reached out to Diane. Okay.
That sounds great.
Yep. Let's see. Hold on. We always do the validation that we're recording. We are. Okay.
This is 80 something podcast.
Banzai!
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 Hey, where's the meat? I don't think there's anybody back there.
You or any of your family ever seen a spook, specter, or ghost?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your phone and call the professionals. Go Ghostbusters! Our courteous and efficient staff is on call 24 hours a day to serve all your supernatural elimination needs.
We're ready to believe you!
Now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I.
Joe! Be it to each other. And party on, dudes!
This is Banzai Retro Club. Can you dig it? I am Dave online. I have got Scott.
Hey, everybody. Great to be back.
And today we are joined by the iconic 80s American film actress and dream girl babe, Diane Franklin, of fame of Last American Virgin, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, and Better Off Dead. Welcome to the show, Diane.
Thank you so much for having me, and I love that intro. Thank you.
Something I was curious about. Did you ever get worried about being typecast as a babe, or is that kind of like a badge of honor for you?
Actually, I have to say I'm the one who sort of kind of brought it up.
Okay.
Well, here's what it is. First of all, you never know as an actor how you're going to be remembered. You know, you do films, you do a lot of things you do. I mean, I remember having a conversation with Heather Langenkamp, who does Nightmare on Elm Street. And I said to her, you know, it's just a moment in time. It's just like, I could have been you, you could have been me. Like, we could have had different roles. Like, it was just a moment in time where a director decides, I want to go with this person. And then that person becomes the, you know, associated with horror films, or one person may be associated with comedies. So you just don't know as an actor where your success will, you know, or where you'll be remembered for what. So for me, I think it's so interesting because I've done a lot of a wide range of kind of work. It's really funny because I actually wrote an autobiography about my life, and actually I've written two, but I wrote them. And when I went to write them, I tried to say, well, what is it that links me to everything I've done? Like, what is it that, you know, like, I did horror, I did comedy, you know, I did drama and punky stuff and I'm like, what is it? And then it just kind of occurred to me that I was like the crush. I was the girl who, you know, the guys wanted to be with and, you know, date. And so I thought, well, if that's the case, what's a real good 80s word for that? And that came babe, you know, so babe came out. I was like, oh, yeah, I was a babe, wasn't I? I guess I was a babe. So I guess whether it's tongue or tuck in cheek or whatever, but I just thought it was a funny name. And then it sort of was like, you know what? You know, I think that it's what an honor. I mean, so many girls would like to be or, you know, girls would like to be babes. And it's very, you know, kind of 80s, like you in the know of like that's the word that they use in the 80s with dudes and babes. So I sort of put it out there. And I think that people really felt, you know, happy and excited to be able to go, oh, yeah, you know, she was a babe. She was like, so which is why my book title includes it, because it really is sort of that was the time period in the 80s where babe was popular. I mean, people were babes. I mean, and to a certain extent, I think today people are babes, but to me, it always sounded very 80s. So that is how I feel about it.
Yeah, I got worried about, yeah, I totally got worried about, yeah. You know, if it was one of those things that were like, oh, you know, that was just a label. I'm more than that. And yeah. that's what I was worried.
Oh, I am more than that. But I don't need to, but now my age, I would like to be called a babe. It's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
So, this has like been a perfect segue because I've been thinking about this. You saying that, you know, there are certain people that get cast for certain roles. Mm-hmm. And Dave and I and Rose, who's not joining us for this evening, you know, we talk about movies and stuff. We're like, well, you know, who else would have been really good in that role? You
yep.
know?
Mm-hmm.
And I got to say, I after I found out that we were going to be talking to you, I started having all these things going through my head. I'm like, oh my gosh, she would have been perfect for these specific roles. And I'm gonna tell you what I think you would have been, like, you would have nailed with no problem. Stacy Hamilton from Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Okay, like perfect. Yeah. I think that would have been perfect. The other ones. Oh wait, I got them written down. I'm drawing a blank now because I get nervous when I'm talking to people that are of, you know, celebrities.
Like yourself.
Yeah, like your babeness, exactly.
Is that a word now?
I'm flipping
the girls. Okay, here we go. I think you could have pulled off either role in The Breakfast Club. Okay. Either Alice or Claire.
That's a great compliment. Now that's okay. Really cool. That is so much fun. So you mean like the Molly and the Ali Sheedy? That those parts?
Yes, exactly.
Very cool.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Yes,
and then Sloan from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Like, these are all so 80s, but I think you really would have fit in any of those roles, and I think you would have been nobody would ever know the difference of how, you know, the importance of those roles. They would have like just accepted you the way that all these people have accepted, you know, Molly Ringwald or Ali Sheedy or I'm sorry, Sloan. Oh my gosh, I'm drawing a blank on her. The actor's name.
Is it Mia Sara?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. But I just think you would have been great in any of those roles. Like you had the perfect personality, the great look for it. You know, you really could have gone any way of those.
Well, anyway. You made my night. Seriously, I tell you, I have some fun things to tell you regarding that.
Okay, cool.
But you know, I think it is really nice. People take for granted that, you know, when people get cast, I mean. And, you know, some things get down to the wire. I mean, certainly in the 80s, I mean, I'm sure things still go down to the wire. Like, it's so close. And it's just like one person's decision changes everything. With John Hughes, I think it's really interesting that John used Molly Ringwald because I really feel like that she represented a girl's just not being happy about everything. There was a disgruntledness about her that I think was a really, I mean, as a character, that was really, I have to say, almost like it's just sort of women not being the object anymore, but they're sort of they're more, I guess they have more them a personality. I mean, she had judgment in her as her role as the 16-year-old. She liked things. She didn't like things. The one thing I had when I was younger, I was, to me, like, I played the ingenue. And there was a pilot that I went and I did called Too Good to Be True. And actually, in that pilot, I had a very similar personality to Molly Ringwald in that pilot, which was, you know, I didn't buy into everything. I was kind of like a little bit more savvy, a little bit more wise. But I didn't seem to keep getting that kind of personality. Or that kind of role wasn't a given. Those roles weren't a smart girl wasn't happening until we got a little bit more mid-80s. It wasn't early 80s. I mean, I know Last American Virgin, I was, you know, the object. And I was that actually was the first teen comedy. Last American Virgin was actually made before Fast Times. And I was the object of desire. And it was the first film where teenagers were used to play teenagers. And in the 80s. And just like, and that's actually what my second book is about. If you go look up Diane Franklin, Excellent Curls.
By the way, the titles of your books are amazing. Yeah.
You have to say it because I love hearing other people say it because it's.
Oh yeah. I gotta look it up. I don't remember it off the top of my head.
They're very long. Very long titles.
If you want to look at my books, just look up Diane Franklin book because there's no way you're gonna remember the title, but it's hilarious. And I wrote it that way because I wanted people to understand that I have a sense of humor about myself as well. Even though I'm very serious about what I do as an actress, you know, you're going to have fun, you know, reading these books. Do you have it or should I say it?
No, I got it. Wait.
It's really long.
Sorry, I'm trying to, yeah.
But it's super fun.
I got volume 2 up.
Okay, yeah, go for it. That's the book about, Last American Virgin and how that was the first film, mostly about Virgin.
That's the Excellent Curls of the Last American French Exchange Babe of the 80s.
See, there you go. Excellent. You did a lovely job. There you go. And that was my second book, but my first book was The Excellent Adventures of the Last American. So the first one's about my career as an actress, and the second one is about my being the first actress with curly hair in the 80s. Which is kind of hard to believe, but I had been modeling for, you know, 10 years before I did I got a big break, and that was Virgin. And I was looking for those curly-haired actors. Nobody, except for Amy Irving in Carrie, had curly hair. That was like the pretty girl. Like, no, there was no pretty girl with curly hair. There were curly haired girls, but they were always the funny ones or they were the awkward ones, but they weren't the dream girl. And it wasn't until Virgin that happened.
And the only one I really remember after that, like in the 80s, was Dirty Dancing.
Yes, and that was way later. That was
like 87 or 88, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the only one I remember as being like curly haired. All the rest, you're right. It's like most of them have like either wavy or you know, feathered.
It was Sarah Fawcett, Marcia Brady, blue eyes. Yeah. He's like, forget it, you know. There was no ethnic beauty, is what I'm saying. So here's something to blow your mind. Okay, so you were saying, wouldn't it be fun, you know, if I had had those roles? So here are roles that I auditioned for, and also got like maybe screen tested, very close to getting. So you'll enjoy this. One was Karate Kid.
Nice.
The other one was Flashdance.
Okay.
Bachelor Party.
As Tom Hanks. Tawny Kitaen.
I thought Kim Cattrall or so. I don't know. I think
Tawny Kitaen would lead on that one.
Yeah. Oh, that's weird. Okay. So that's Bachelor Party. Then I was, I know that's a little different. Amadeus.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was between me and Elizabeth Berridge for the role of Pastanza. And it was so close. I mean, I was flown to Czechoslovakia. That's how close it was. Like, it was crazy. It was in mid-shooting. And I actually write about it in my first book. But, yes, but isn't it interesting to think about other people in those roles, you know? and what makes them special. You know, like, would that person, did that person make that series special, or would have somebody else has done just a good, you know, as good a job? So,
well, I think, you know, I think it can go two different ways. Like, I think sometimes the person that gets cast makes the role.
Yeah.
Okay. But then I think there's other storylines that have you know, you could have a handful of actors go into that, the main character's role or whatever, that specific role, mm-hmm. and it would still work because the writing is so good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I understand. Yeah. No, you're right. And you want, and you would like to just see that person in that part.
Oh, yeah. It'd be fun to go back and see who, you know, who would fit into other great roles like that.
Yeah.
So. Very interesting.
I like the ones you brought up. I, you know, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, that would have been fun. That would be
great. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, that would have been fun. And you would have been, you know, been able to do on-site in Chicago, too. Have you been to Chicago much?
I actually visited for the first time last year when my son went to school there. He started, and I loved it. I couldn't believe it. It was so great. I mean, walking around and the shops, the stores, you know, just the feeling of the city. I went crazy. I was like, I love it here. I want to move here.
Yeah, it's a great city. It's not nearly as large as New York. I know I was reading a little bit of your bio saying that, you know, you grew up on was it Long Island, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you always like to go to the city. And
oh, yeah. I went to the city a lot because I started acting. Like, I started going on auditions when I was, like, 10 years old. And I would take the LIRR with my mom, and we would go to the city. I'd go for auditions, and I'd come back. So I was really, you know, used to being, you know, in the city by myself later on, very early. And I actually went to NYU. When I started college and lived in the city. So I loved the city life. I mean, I really do. It's very, you know, exciting.
Dave, and, you actually work in downtown Chicago, right?
Yeah, actually, yeah, that just started a month ago. And I, you know, I've always been in the suburbs. You know, always worked in the suburbs, lived in the suburbs. But now I'm taking the train and I'm going down there every day, and I'm getting to enjoy, you know, what I've seen for, like, on the news or, you know, all these iconic scenes, and really just getting to immerse myself into the city feeling. And
how do you like it?
It is so awesome.
Yeah.
It is so awesome because, I mean, you never know what you're going to turn the corner. You never know what you're going to find.
Yeah. Everybody who has not been to Chicago, you have to go at least once. It's lovely. It's just such a nice melting pot of so many different, like, I feel the pride of the city. It's very clean. Everybody who has a place there, like a shop or store, they just take such pride in what they do. I really love it.
Yeah, a lot of cultures. A lot of cultures going on there. And they're all very, like, specific to certain areas. It's kind of cool. You can walk through Little Greece and Little China and all kinds of stuff. So, very cool.
All right. So I want to take a step back because we actually started a conversation and I wanted to bring us, you know, back to where we were going.
Yes.
And that was
sorry.
Why
are
we totally tangent all the time, but that's cool.
That's my thing. I have a tendency to bring us off track, and Dave is what we call him as the podcast overlord. He brings us back in line. gets us back on track. So my apologies if I do go off a little sometimes. It happens. It's
but
the way my
brain. We have the overlord.
Yes, we do.
We must keep on track. No, just kidding. No, actually, I love the tangents. And it's hard. It's so hard to like interrupt those because I want to hear like the roles that you were up for. That was, you know, that was awesome. But you asked why we reached out to you. And I think it's kind of what's really fun to know about is that we had a podcast before that we used to do, and it was all about the 80s. And we started this one, Bonsai Retro Club, which is 70s, 80s, 90s. Mm. And when we first started up Bonsai Retro Club, I wanted to have a new closing phrase for our podcast. And before I used to say thank you for living the 80s with us, So I wanted to change it up, and I wanted to have something new, but I really couldn't come up with something unique to say.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow it just popped in my head to say, well, be excellent to each other.
Oh, so, nice.
So I've been saying that on Bonsai Retro Club since we started this. Was it been 2 years now, Scott?
It has been 2 years. But yeah. It's been amazing how we just keep going, and we it's so much fun. It's so much fun just to talk to people like Diane, to be able to reminisce about those times.
Right.
Of especially the 80s. I mean, I just turned I'll be 51 in January, and my wife and I, my wife is also going to be 51 early next year, and we had an 80s birthday party.
It that was we kind excellent. Of threw.
Oh, it was a blast. And we
and
had, you know,
triumphant.
It was most triumphant, yes. It really was. So anyway, yeah, so we wanted to expand a little and go into the 70s and 90s too, because, you know, it's not just the 80s that we grew up in.
Right.
So anyway, where were you going with that, Dave? I tangented.
No, it's all good. It's all good. but, you know, so the new catchphrase or the ending phrase for the podcast has become be excellent to each other. And it's, you know,
I've used that in my Facebook rules. You know, when you have like rules that you say, like, you know, for people to become Facebook friends with you, that was my one rule. Like, one rule, be excellent to each other, which
is such a great rule.
Great message.
It is.
And it also is. It just cuts. It's like it is all we need. That's all we need to be excellent to each other. That is it.
We need more people. Yeah, we need more people like to be excellent to each other.
Yeah, and good timing too, because they're, you know, I mean, it's crazy, but you know, they're going to do a Bill and Ted's 3.
Yeah,
and it's going to be out. They're going to shoot it this year, and it's definitely happening. And I do not know if I'm going to be in it. I know that there's a role written for the princesses, but you know, you can never say anything until after it is done, because you know, casting changes, and you just never know. But I think it would be most triumphant for all the people who are watching. You know, if they could come and see the princesses, the original ones, that would be very lovely. I think people would get a great kick out of it. So we'll see. I'll let you know.
I love how you broke into the accent.
Oh, it's just lovely. I mean, you know me as Princess Joanna, so I don't want to ruin it for you. I don't want to know your image of me, you know. So we'll just keep it like this. And she'll pop up every once in a while. So
outstanding.
You really are. You really do have a talent for that. Like going
thank
different.
You.
I mean, that's
well,
you're French. I mean, obviously you spoke French, but
you
really, please, yeah, I have no idea what you're talking about, but
but like it sounds very romantic and very.
Yeah, my wife took 3 years of French, and she hasn't had the opportunity to use it.
But does she give you language lessons?
No.
Well, you need to have your language lessons, then you will be happy. Very good. But I just want to also say, because of a language thing, and I'm just putting this in also. I actually do another voice in the new movie that's coming out in February that you will be able to see, because the premiere was so big that they're actually going to put it out in the theaters, and that's Amityville Murders.
Okay, so earlier in the show, when Dave was doing the introductions, one of the things that always comes to mind with you is your role in Amityville in part two. And
right.
I always loved you in that. That was one of the roles that really stood out for me.
Wow. And that to me,
like everybody says, oh, Better Off Dead or Last American Version, but I always think one of the first movies I think of for you is Amityville 2. And
so
I don't know why.
And to me, it's so weird. Like, I'm just saying, the reason it's so weird is because in the 80s, when I did it, with everybody else, nobody was making part twos. So we all thought, oh yeah, we're doing part two, but who's going to see it? Because everyone's going to see part one. I mean, if they have a choice between one or two, they're going to watch one. Because at the time, there was no way to watch things easily. It's not like you could put it on a VHS or a beta or a disc or a DVD. Mm. There was nothing. So when we did part two, really were thinking, who's going to watch this? And then, oh my gosh, people just have loved that film. They tell me they, you know, they think it's the best one of all the Amityvilles, which is a huge compliment to me. And I, you know, again, every time I do any work, I put my heart in it. I mean, anybody who knows, like, if you see my work, it's never just a job. I always put my heart into it. And I just love all the roles I've done. I just love them. And but that film, I'm so surprised. And so many people are remembering it. And like big name people, like I sometimes get, you know, famous people coming up to me and go, I loved you in that film. I'm like, this is so weird. I mean, it's just, I would have never thought that anyone would see part two. But there you go. There you go.
So I wanted to ask you about Bill and Ted's. Can you tell us why you weren't in Bogus Journey?
Ah, okay. Well, this is interesting. All right. We were in the first film, and Bill and Ted's, I thought originally that I was going to be auditioning for Joan of Arc because she was French, and I had just come off doing Better Off Dead. So I thought, okay, of course, I'm going to be, again, they want to see me because they want me to be Joan of Arc. But they actually, I think, originally, I don't know if they were thinking about me for Missy or something. There was just like different roles. But then they asked me, can you do an English accent? And I said, of course I can do an English accent. I would love to, you know, very easy. And they thought, would you mind being a princess? And I was like, a princess? I don't even remember the princesses in the script, because the script was like, there was a lot more presence of the other characters. And I didn't even, you know, I didn't even know the princesses, you know, had a role really. So what happened was, actually, Joan of Arc says nothing in the entire film, which I didn't realize until later. She says nothing, not one word, but the princesses talk. So they asked me if I wanted to do it, and I said, absolutely. So we wound up doing it. And then when they did Bill and Ted's 2, we thought, oh, well, we're going to be in the second one. And then they said, well, they new director, and so they want you to audition. So, okay, we're going to audition for the parts that we already did. Okay. So can I, the other princess, audition? And then they said, no, we're going to go with these other princesses, which to me was just weird. I mean, aside from anything, I thought, why would you do that when you establish characters? It's going to be confusing to the audience.
Right.
But, you know, and it also is just like kind of, it just was like, I thought, is there a purpose to it? I mean, maybe there's a reason that we don't know about. But I have two theories, and I have another thing to tell you about it. One was, I think, you know, the director, it was his choice. I know that the guys wanted us. Maybe the producers wanted other people too. That's possible. But I think that if they wanted somebody else, it might have been because they wanted the guys to be sort of more freewheeling, and they didn't want it to be about the guys and the princesses. They wanted it to be more about two dudes. And so there's a possibility of that. There's a possibility just wanted to hire other girls and meet other girls. I don't know. I don't speculate. But I know that the guys really wanted us.
And you're talking about Alex and Kiana?
Yeah, they wanted to have us, and they didn't understand it either. And I will say this, I'm actually going to be meeting this week the other Princess Joanna, or like the other princess who played my part. And I'm going to talk to her about it and see what her, because I haven't spoken to her. I've never talked to her before, but I'm actually going to meet her this week for the first time ever. So I'm going to see, maybe she'll give me some insight to what happened. But that, it was so strange. So the other thing I wanted to say was, in Bill and Ted's, that the guys were totally into it. And then this Bill and Ted's, I do know that there's going to be other princesses. Oh, I know what I was going to tell you. This is very funny. So I did Bill and Ted's, the first one, and for some reason, the person who did the credits got the names mixed up, because I was originally Princess Elizabeth. But when they did the credits, I went to Princess Joanna. So I thought, okay, well, I'll sign all these autographs, you know, that I do Princess Joanna. Well, then I go to find out from Ed Solomon, who's the writer, that Princess Elizabeth has always been with Keanu. So in the second one, in Bill and Ted's, the second the princess with the dark curly hair is named Princess Elizabeth. So if I happen to do Bill and Ted's 3, I may be a Princess Elizabeth. So there's a little inside scoop for those who are like, you know, who want to know the backstory and like some cool things about Bill and Ted's, is that the princesses, they may have their name switched. It's pretty weird. So, but yeah, isn't that crazy? So
it's fun. Signing
autographs, Princess Elizabeth and Princess Joanna. I don't know.
You make up your mind which one you want me to be.
Who am I? I'll just sign it, you know, princess. Like, just keep it even.
Yeah, just keep it funny. Keep it simple. It's totally funny.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I didn't like that either, that they switched up people. I don't like it when they switch up people in character roles or in specific roles. So, and
yeah,
I'm going to go on another little tangent here.
All right.
Being near Christmas.
Well, I do have one more Bill and Ted question, though, but go ahead.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
Who's first, me or you?
I don't know. Is your tangent going to get us onto a different movie?
No, okay. Not really.
Then go for it.
It's about what she was talking about with different people playing different characters. So my wife loves the Christmas movies right around now. Mm-hmm. You know, she's really – we've been binging a lot of them and just watching all kinds of different movies. And nice. Yesterday we watched A Very Brady Christmas.
Oh.
Now the complete family was there except for Cindy.
Okay.
It was a different person that played Cindy, and it like it throws me.
Right.
I've seen it a few times, and it throws me off. I'm like, especially a character like that that's been like entrenched in your memory of, you know, a specific person.
Yeah.
But yeah, when they change it up like that, it just really it kind of
so
draws
sad.
Your attention away
yeah.
from
it's so
the fun of the event.
It really
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
You know?
So that.
I completely agree. It's just, it takes your attention off it. It's, you know, you just, you look at it and you go, can't you just give that to the audience? Can't you just give them that moment where the nostalgia can continue and we can just do this? And, you know, obviously there's so many reasons that that person may not be in there, but, you know, I agree. It definitely takes the attention away. And, you know, I think sometimes people think, oh, it's not that important to the audience. But it is. It is.
It is. It really is. You know? Especially when you're talking about, like, the Brady Bunch, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a pretty significant part of our pop culture history as people of the 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000 or whatever, or 60s even.
Well,
but
it's
anyway.
A part of Americana. Do you know what I mean?
Oh,
it's
yeah.
part of what makes America. A Brady Bunch is very American. You know, it became, you know, a staple of like what we think of when you think of America television, you know? So
yeah,
I agree.
So, okay. Tangent over. Dave, continue with your question of Bill and Ted.
Well, no, it was a follow-up because I was listening to the commentary on Bill and Ted's and Alex was complaining about how a lot of the actors, when they were stuck in the booth together, it would get kind of pungent because of the heat.
Right.
And so I was just curious, the scenes that I think there was only maybe one scene that you came out of the booth with George. Were you in the booth for long with George? And
oh, that's hilarious. Oh, that's really funny. good question. I will say this, and I have not thought about this until this very moment. It did smell. It did smell. There you go. That is so funny. And I just thought it was, you know, just the phone booth. But now I'm thinking maybe it was the body odor of the entire cast.
Well, he talked about it. He said that there's a lot of scenes where they were filming outside, obviously. And so in order to get the setup, you know, for the scene, they would have to go pile into the booth. And they had all the different actors that played the different historical figures.
Oh, my
and
God.
And all of them with all of their wardrobe. And no air going in, air circulation going into the booth. And I'm like, oh my God, that would be horrible.
Yeah.
And so I was just trying to recollect the scenes that you had coming out of the booth.
Yeah, you know, you never know what actors go through, you know? It's
right.
Little moments where you think, oh, that was just easy. And then but when they experience it, when we all experience our things, oh my gosh, it's crazy. I think there was definitely a stench, I will have to say. I have to ask him about that. If we go back in our, like, she has a much better memory of a lot of stuff, and I'll ask her about that. But yeah, I do remember that it did have a kind of a horrible odor.
So were you in there long with George?
No, not luckily not.
Okay.
Because they would just take it from us, like, in there and go and out, you know?
Okay.
It wasn't like we had to hang out there in there. And George certainly didn't smell. He was quite well kept. He had no problem with that. But I just remember it was definitely danky. And my guess is it was the residual smell of the other cast members that they did not clean it out. So that's what that was. Okay.
all these years and nobody's asked you that.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
But I also know that you guys filmed the prom sequence, but that never made it.
Oh my gosh. And I hope someday they put that in a Blu-ray. Because boy, that was unbelievably cool. Yeah, we shot the prom. You know, we were at the prom and, it was just lovely. I think, you know, that was like one of the first scenes we did. I think it was actually one of the first things we did was in Arizona. And we shot it there, I think it was a school, and it was all decorated. And the thing I remember, I have to look in like my diary and take a look and see if there's, you know, details, but I do remember the best thing about it was, well, we had different outfits. We had as princesses, like gorgeous, also beautiful dresses. And we had, and Bill and Ted, this was the great thing. Bill and Ted had tuxes, but their tuxes were cut off at the knee, and then they wore high top sneakers with, white socks, black sneakers with white socks. And I thought if that had come out with, as the ending from Bill and Ted's, forever guys would be going to the prom looking like that. Forever. Like people at tux stores would be flipping out right now because they'd be like, why did these guys cut the pants? There's over there. What do they want us to like trim them to their knee? What's wrong with them?
Saying, but just that look, doesn't just say 1980s, that yells 1980s.
Yes.
Yes. It screams it from the high top mountains.
Uh-huh.
Yes, 1980s.
It was amazing. It was amazing. And, you know, I don't know why we didn't, they didn't decide in a way not to do it. That would be a good question for Ed Solomon and Chris, because I think that it was definitely fun, but again, it didn't end. The film didn't end on this story's about the guys.
Right.
Like it, you know, Bill and Ted's ends where the guys are the main focus, and they're going to be in a band. And I think that's really the most important thing.
The world.
A band change the world.
Yeah.
I what I think is great is, you know, sometimes people think, you know, oh, these silly ideas. What's with these movies? They're just so silly and ridiculous. But they can touch so many people. Simplicity can touch so many people. And that movie has very simple, great philosophical moments. Mm-hmm. And I love that. You know,
like, be excellent to each other.
Right. Be excellent. Yeah. And then Socrates, Dust in
yeah.
the Wind, dude. You know, I mean, that was a song, but still there were so many great moments in that film where, in you know, George Carlin even, you know, he had some great lines that were, I think it just makes you stop and think, and you do because it's such a fun movie, you relax and you can take it in. So I'm thrilled that people still watch it now and that I get recommended. I think that Bill and Ted's perhaps was my most commercials. It was the most commercial success for me. Because a lot of my films were cult classics and iconic, but they were slow to rise. Like, you know, it became like, oh, did you see that? You know, it was word of mouth. And people wanted to see the movies. And now they're iconic because it was sort of a word of mouth. But I think Bill and Ted's was probably the biggest grossing film that came out.
Yeah, I could see that because it did get a lot of popularity back then.
And it was also, think of it, it was kind of, not mocking, but it was – somewhat, you know, Fast Times at Ridgemont High with Spicoli, Sean Penn playing Spicoli was the original dude. Really, he was the creator of the dude. He was the creator of the dude. Then, and then in, now in 1989, you know, Bill and Ted finish it off. You know, like they end the 80s with a Bill and Dude. And I just think that's a very nice bookend to the decade.
It is. And, you know, you said you use the word silly. And I got to tell you, I love that word. Because dang it, if we don't need more silly in this world.
You are so beyond.
Because there's just so much, there's so much crap out there. We just need, we need some silly sometimes.
Yeah. No, absolutely. You need some fun. You need silly. You need to have some upbeat energy coming from what you watch. And then you can go out and face things. Sometimes, you know, but if it's too dark, it's hard, you know. That's why I'm very proud of the films I've done, all the different things I've done. I have a wide range, and it's, you know, I just feel really fortunate because, you know, you don't always feel like watching one kind of movie, you know?
Right.
And now, today, it's the viewer's market, you know? It's the customer's, whatever the customer sees. You can have a very boutique market. You can say, I like comedies, but I like them very dry. Or I like comedies that are, like, you know, outrageous. And there's a market for you, you know? There's hundreds of films that, you know, you can watch, so... Thank goodness for the internet in that way, I have to say. Because we can still watch these films over and over again, which is great.
Which we do. I know Dave visits a lot of the older ones, and I do all the time. I have my list of movies that I like to go back and watch that I've seen over and over again.
Yeah, or you say, hey, let's all get together and watch this movie. And most people in the room say, no, that movie. And they go, oh, yeah, I want to watch that. Like, I want to have that experience, you know, or want to share that experience watching it with you, you know. I think that movies, they're just, I mean, nowadays, we have sort of a glut of movies. Like, there's so many. You know, there's so many things to watch. We don't even have the time to watch it. But.
Well, between all the different production companies now, you've got all the networks are doing their own thing. Like Netflix has their own production company that is putting out some amazing stuff. Amazon is backing, you know, a bunch of different Prime shows that are amazing shows. And so, there's a lot of competition out there.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start falling into like a genre specific, you know, you kind of keep going down that same road and like a certain type of movie. Yeah. But there's so much to choose from out there now. It's crazy how it seems like I don't know anything about like production, but do you think production cost has come down for some of those, like some of those movie shows?
Well, the big studios, they need to be able to do they need to sort of corner the market on special effects. And that's why all these superhero movie films are coming out through them, because they know that they can get their audience, because no one else can afford to do what they do. Do you know what I mean?
Right. So like Netflix even though Netflix is making a lot of money, they probably don't have enough to go out and make another Transformers or one of the, like the superheroes that you're talking about.
Yeah. Whoever is the bigger companies who are sort of corning the market. I mean, they would like to, you know, I'm sure they would love to do a love story and stuff, but but what makes you go and see their film as opposed to somebody else is if they even have, if they have a big star or if they have, you know, these special effects. But I do know, I have some, a little cool things to tell you that are coming up for me this year. One is that my daughter is actually a filmmaker, and she is doing a film. She just got her film optioned by, are you ready for this, the other princess who did Bill and Ted's.
No way.
Awesome.
Yes way. Here's been so cool, because you love Bill and Ted. So here's, this is how it goes. I know, this is crazy, right?
This is most excellent.
Most excellent. Beyond excellent. So Kimberly LaBelle, who played the other princess in Bill and Ted's, she is actually a movie producer. She actually produces films under the name Kimberly Cates. She changed her name to Kimberly Cates. And she has been not acting for years, and she's just been producing movies. And my daughter has been doing comedy and writing and directing, and she has a web series on YouTube called Sugar Babies, and she's been in the LA Film Festival, Soho Film Festival. Like, she's got tons of stuff she's been doing, and she just graduated UCLA, and she had a script. And Kim said to me, when that, I want to see her, she's been watching her work. And she said, when she gets out of school, please let me see her first screenplay, like if she has a screenplay. So my daughter gave her the screenplay, and she went crazy. And I want to option it. So she optioned it. And now what's going to happen is, and this is highly unusual because, you know, we talked about films being made. It's going to be a low budget feature, but it is, it's a dark comedy, and it is called This Gets Rough, R-U-R-U-F-F. And it is a dark comedy. And basically the deal is, Olivia wrote it. She will direct it, and she's going to act in it, like a triple threat.
Hmm.
And also, I will be in it as well. So here you've got Bill and Ted princesses working together, and Olivia's going to be making this movie in 2019. He's going to be shooting it. So this is kind of amazing because the princesses come and work together and things happen. It's pretty cool. So I'm just grateful because, you know, I love the fact that Olivia has something. And by the way, her name is Olivia De Laurentiis. So anyone wants to Google her, you will see my daughter, who's awesome. And my son is awesome too, but he does music and he's still in college. But
you said he plays the upright bass?
He plays the upright bass. Yeah.
Yeah. My nephew is a cellist. He's like going professional. It's very cool. The string instruments are beautiful to listen to.
They're great. And also difficult to carry on a plane, but you know, that's so big.
Yeah, try checking that luggage. Yeah.
Dear God, getting into Canada, I can't even begin to tell you just like, what is happening. But
the bass is huge.
Yeah, bass is, he got his bass to Canada for a music school called Domaine Ferger. He gets there and he's there for a few weeks and he goes to come back and they tell him, we can't fit the bass on the plane. Like that's how it got scary. We're like, he is a baby. He is 19 out there with his double bass. He's not coming home without it. Okay. We are making this happen. Screaming on the phone going, get him on the plane. Anyway, so that's coming up. And then also Amityville Murders is going to be coming out at the end of February, I think. I'm not sure, but maybe.
Now, is that going to be a series or is that going to be a feature?
It's a feature film. It's a feature.
Okay.
Film.
Yeah. Okay.
So we're looking. I'm not sure, but they're gonna start doing a lot of publicity come January. So you're gonna hear a lot about it. They didn't. I think that this is what happened. You know, they made Amityville Murders, and again, you know, we talk about nostalgia and bringing people back. So they brought, I was originally playing the daughter in Amityville 2. Now I play the mother. And it's the best acting I've done in my life. I mean, seriously, this piece is the best acting I've ever done. So I'm very excited for my fans to see it. Fans, friends, people. I just want you to tell me what you think. It's quite amazing because it's based on a true story. I mean, actual DeFeo murders. I play Louise DeFeo. So that is, you know, definitely, it's not, it's obviously, you know, what happens at the end. But it's a character film. It's like a drama. It's a docudrama. It's intense. And it's really well done. And director, writer, Daniel Ferran put it together. So he wrote it, directed it, and it's his first film. He's writer director. So it's a very special film. And we also got Burt Young to come back as my dad. And we wanted to get Ritanya, but we couldn't get it together to have her. So I totally understand when you said, you know, can you bring the princesses back? I felt that way, you know, with Ritanya. It was just one of the harder situations, and I was certainly bucking for her. But anyway, you can't always, I guess, get what we want. There's the Rolling Stones motto. Can you get what you want? You get what you need, right? So, and then there's going to be another, an HBO special that I'm going to be in, and that is a surprise. That'll be coming out also in February. And my birthday's in February, There's going to be a lot of things coming out in February. Oh, and I'm at the Hollywood Show in Los Angeles in February. The first weekend of February, I will be at the Hollywood Show in Burbank. And I do signing conventions, and that's my first one of the year. So there's a lot going on. And then, I'm going to be in Atlantic City at the end of March at New Jersey Horror Con.
Coast to coast. You're going to go, you're going to go back and visit home?
Yeah. I wish. I don't know if I'll be able to. But my husband's from New Jersey, so he may come. We're going to see if he can get there. So, and then I'll be in Ohio in May for a convention. So we're busy. It's a busy time. And then hopefully doing Bill and Ted's. We'll see. Oh, I hope. Keep your fingers crossed for me.
Most definitely will.
Good.
It's so great, the people that are the executive decision makers for all these great, channels and streaming services and production companies, they're our age, and for them, because they're really enjoying this retro revival. You have such great things like, Stranger Things on Netflix or Glow on on Netflix. And then you have, YouTube Red did Cobra Kai, revisiting Karate Kid. Yeah, and so all these great resurgence of, this time period that we just loved being, the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And, these are the people that are now able to make things happen and say, I want to do this because I thought it was cool back then. So it's awesome. It's just awesome to be around for this revisitation of these properties and relook at, the way they do things. It's just beautiful.
I am very excited because when you're an actor, you don't know who knows you. And then all of a sudden you touch different people's lives. And I just get so excited when, I love new filmmakers. Like, I think I'm so into the fact that young people are getting a chance to explore now. We were talking about how, are there many more films now, more TV? What a gift. If you have a vision and an idea, you can make things happen. And I sometimes think people are afraid to approach actors who are older because they think, why would they, want to talk to me? But they have to understand that actors love to work, and they also, at least from my perspective, you're the new voice. The younger filmmakers are the new voice of your generation. And it's so exciting for particularly, me to get scripts from people who are new writers. And, I get sometimes people send me scripts and they go, I'd love for you to be in this. And I'm into it because I think it's the next generation. And especially having seen my daughter as a filmmaker, I see what she's going through. And I just think it's just so important to be creative and have your voice, just put it out there. And personally, I love to do sci-fi. I'd love to do horror. I would love to be on Stranger Things, obviously, or Cobra Kai. Anything that's retro. I love 80s retro things. In fact, I was going to tell you, I just came back from 80s in the Sand. And you have to know about this. Do you know about 80s in the Sand?
Is that Dominican Republic?
Yes.
Yes. I know of it. I would love to go.
Okay,
timing doesn't always work out. It sounds like a blast.
You have to go. Let me just say, do it. Bring your business there. You have to go. If you love the 80s, I just have to explain to you. I found out about this the first year they did it, last year. And when I heard about it, I was like, has anyone ever done anything like this? I guess they've done some 80s cruises, but
yeah,
I was like, this is where you're right?
Yeah, it's right out of, and I only know that because it's out of Tampa. It's
right? Okay.
The cruise is out of Tampa, one of the 80s cruises that's more popular, and they've been doing that for about 3 or 4 years now.
Yeah, and they bring the 80s bands and 80s celebrities. Mm-hmm. It is so much fun, and it is, all I could say is, first of all, you're with everybody. If you like the 80s or if you like nostalgia, everybody gets you. You just suddenly feel like you're in your youth.
You're home.
Visiting your youth. You don't have to explain to somebody why you're wearing, a Violent Femmes t-shirt or Motels t-shirts. You go, that's just, people just get it. And
good reference.
You know, people so loving it. It's so much fun. So look into it. It's called 80s in the Sand. It's already, I'm set for next year. They're bringing me back again, which is amazing. I was like, please, one more year. It's November. It's usually the first or second week of November. So it's not, it's before Thanksgiving, but I think it's like this year was like from the 3rd to the 5th, but people are starting to make reservations now. And I knew this would start getting popular. I was like, this, it's just, it is the best vacation you'll ever have because it's in a beautiful place. It's an adult place so that like there's drinks, you can have as many drinks as you want, and but no one's like throwing up on each other because they're all adults. Do you know what I mean?
Right. This is a great generation. Like most of us are, we're past that point of like, okay, we're gonna get sauced until we just can't even see anymore. Right, we're not like that anymore. Everybody's like, okay, we're just gonna have a few drinks, have a good time, just kind of chill.
So people love listen to music and relax the beach. I mean, it's so funny because and then there are occasionally like really young people. I've seen people in their 20s come also because they just love 80s nostalgia. I am shocked about it, and I was because I wasn't somebody who would normally do something like that, but I was, I don't know, I just had a feeling about it. And then when I went, it's so good that even my daughter keeps wanting to come back, which is so funny. I said, Olivia, what about the, you know, you're not really that 80s, you know, and she's like, I am coming back next year. I will be there because it is relaxing and beautiful. It's right on the beach and the people are super nice and the bands, I mean, we got to meet, I mean, I was up on stage with, everybody, not just me. You're able to get contact with all the band members. But,
I saw I think it was Instagram that you posted that you were on stage with Berlin.
I was on stage with Berlin with Terry Nunn. Terry Nunn had her arm around me. We were dancing together and she's singing. And she's such a lovely and talented woman. Just a great role model and just awesome. And so I'm bringing it up only because it's a once in a lifetime experience. You've got to go at least once if you love the 80s. It will make your life better. You will come back refreshed and you will come back with a smile on your face. That's the thing. It has good energy. So I'm just got to put it out there. Really hilarious. I mean, it's super weird, right?
It sounds fun, but this is a great way to like. I was going to ask you actually, like a couple of your favorite bands from the 80s, or maybe a couple of favorite movies from the 80s that really just like stand out for you. Especially music. I'm a music guy. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I love music of the 80s. I lean towards the hard rock and metal stuff, but I still appreciate all the other stuff too. There's many times, like I told Dave just not too long ago on another podcast, that one of my favorite songs is, I Want to Be a Cowboy by Boy Scout Cry. Yeah. And Dave was like, kind of, you know, he's like,
you're
really
on drugs.
Like that one? You're like, what are you
You're
thinking?
On drugs, Scott.
Like, that's not Metallica. That's not, right. You know.
That's not your genre. What are you
stuff
doing?
Stuff like that. Yeah, I know. I love stuff like that. Or
Fish Heads.
Yeah.
Oh,
You
know who wrote that? I actually dated the guy who wrote that. It was
Barnes and Barnes?
No, wait. You are talking about like Fish Heads, Roly-Poly Fish Heads. Are you talking about that?
Yeah, that's what, yeah.
You're not going to believe who wrote it. Bill Paxton.
Shut
no.
up.
No.
Uh-huh. Bill Paxton wrote it, and I dated him for a while. Isn't that
you
crazy?
Did, really?
Yes. Isn't that insane? That's
Bill
insane.
Paxton wrote that song?
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh. I had no idea.
Super weird. I know, it's super weird. I don't even know how that even happened, because I like Fish Heads, too, so.
What a terrible,
you know, I was like,
boss that was. My goodness.
Yeah. Oh, and I got to see him. Good. I got to see him before. Like about maybe a year before, I accidentally ran into him at a fest at a convention, and I just got like my last hug goodbye, like just serious, like I didn't even know, like it was crazy. It's just sad. It's just sad. It's not even, it's not fair. It's just horrible.
Like, yeah. Way yeah. Young. Way too young.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't even, it's hard to even, you know, believe. Because, I don't know, we all, I still feel, everybody feels young, you know, we don't feel like that's not okay.
Yeah. Mentally, I'm still like 13. I don't know.
Right?
Well, we act that way. Rose can tell you we act that way.
Yeah,
good.
Rose will definitely, she'll admit to that.
Yeah.
Go, Rose. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
80s,
yeah,
80s music.
And
80s film. Okay.
A couple bands, or a couple artists.
Well, I love the band. I love the Police.
Okay.
Good call.
That's just a classic. And I love were the Pretenders then too, or no? I'm thinking.
Yeah, later. No, they were definitely they were definitely in the '80s, late '70s, early '80s. Very, I mean, Chrissy Hynde,
yeah.
Great.
Devo.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Devo, really?
Oh, I love Devo.
That's awesome.
Oh,
Devo is so. Okay, I mentioned earlier that when I had the party. The,
yeah.
80s party. Well, we have all these records from the 80s, and we have Montreal. And so,
by the way, Last American Virgin has the best album of 80s music ever. Like, check it out because it's got an amazing soundtrack.
Open Arms, Journey.
Yeah, right.
Can't go wrong with that one. Great soundtrack. Yeah. So we rescue greyhounds, like we foster them, and we kind of try to come up with good names. And
see,
we recently. What's that?
I knew I liked you, and there you go.
So we had one, we named him Devo.
Oh, great. Yeah. That's really funny.
We just had another one that we named, and we named her Sharona, as in my Sharona. So anyway, so Devo, that's awesome. Yeah, like, you don't hear that.
Kimmy Robertson used to date one of the guys in Devo. I don't
really
know which one it was, but yeah. Who played Rose in that
Last American Virgin. Yeah, she was in Last American Virgin.
Yeah, and she's the coolest person ever.
I love her. She does that. Cool. Her voice just is. And that's not her real voice, is it?
Oh, it is.
Is it really?
That's Kimmy's voice.
That's the high, squeaky voice. I thought that was always, like, accentuated, you know, just to be theatrical or whatever.
Oh, no. She talks like that.
Really?
She can manipulate it, you know. You know, she knows how to make it happen. But no, her voice is that beautiful. It's so unique and so adorable.
I always thought she was really cute. Just her personality and the way she came off in a few different movies. So.
Yes. Yeah. You're correct.
So speaking about Last American Virgin, did you really have to break Gary's heart? I mean, come on.
This is a question that plagues me and will plague me till my dying day. This movie, first of all, it will never go away because of that ending. It will always, I think it will have, if there's a remake, you know, that movie will stay with us. Maybe they'll, who knows, I don't know. Brett Ratner had the rights, I don't know if he still does, but that movie affected his entire life. It was based on the director. It was based on Boaz Davidson. Well, first of all, Boaz Davidson was the writer and director, another writer and director, as was, you know, Better Off Dead, writer-director Savage Sue Holland, Daniel Franz, writer-director, Amityville Murders, Boaz Davidson, writer-director. So these films, that when a writer and director come together, you really get their heart. You get the soul of a film. I really love that combination because they really know their material, they visualize it. But anyway, Boaz Davidson, true story, everything that happened in Virgin really happened to him.
Really?
And that ending, we thought we were going to change. All of us as kids got that script and went, well, he's obviously going to change the ending. We get to the set, he's not changing the ending. No, I don't change the ending. This is not what I do. I do this movie, this my life story, that's the way it goes. Now, it was a remake of a film called Lemon Popsicle. And Lemon Popsicle was an Israeli film that was a hit in Israel. And so when Canon Films decided to do it, they did it. If you watch Lemon Popsicle shot to shot, it is exact replica of Virgin.
Wow.
Like those two films. You have to watch them. It's amazing. The other thing about Virgin is that, so we wanted to change the engine. He wouldn't let us. And then this was the cool part, and I found out this later, that Boaz actually had his real life. There was a real girl who was Karen, or who whatever her real name was, but the real girl who was the role of Karen, he actually had her watch the film, or the film in Lemon Popsicle, or even maybe it was Virgin, had that woman watch it, and she burst into tears. Because she had no idea what she did to him. She had no idea that she had done that to him. So she cried through the whole thing. Pretty interesting.
Wow. It was a heartbreaker of a love story.
Yeah.
Really.
It's the movie lures guys in with the teen sex part, and then you get in there and you go, wait a minute. Like, you think you've got it pegged. Because it's called The Last American Virgin. You're thinking, happy ending. It's American, right? You're going to have a happy ending.
Right.
But it's European. You know, this is the way life is. That's it. That's life ending, you know? So
I always like the realistic endings. Yeah. Like, because not everything is all, you know, unicorns and rainbows at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Right?
And then also the audience then walks away saying, you know, I didn't see it coming. Like, that's the thing about me playing that role is I saw it years later, you know, I hadn't seen it for a while, and then I see it again. And I watched it and I went, oh my God, I am such a biatch. Really? Seriously, what's going on? I was that mad myself. But what I realized is what made it even worse was the fact that the girl who did Lemon Popsicle, she was just sort of the girl. And when I played it, you didn't see it coming. I really played it like somebody you'd want to see with Gary at the end, and that's why it's such a shock. So I don't know if that's one film you were saying, you know, of other people playing roles. It's definitely a story that if they had put anybody in it, you would have been mad at the girl, but I don't think someone would have played it the way I did. It would have been different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, that movie, I related very well to Gary because I was shy, I was quiet. I was not aggressive in pursuing the ladies.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the girls that I had crushes on ended up with the guys that had more of the drive and the, you know, had a little more confidence, a little more confidence, and just really kind of cocky, really.
Yeah.
And so I totally related. This is one of the movies that I related to. Yeah.
Yeah, that film, the guy, Rick's character, takes control.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, the only thing about Gary, which is, people have debated this with this film, and people have done actually college papers on this movie. Like, I've had college professors go, we've had our, you know, kids watch his film and write papers on it. And it is that, you know, Gary was also, although he had a crush on me, he was also manipulative. Like, he, you know, took the air out of my tire, and he sort of made things try to kind of happen. And I never say to him, I love you, which is the interesting part. Like, you know, it's that fine line where I'm just nice, but I'm never, But I played it, my character, like, when we found out this ending wasn't going to change, then I was like, uh-oh, how am I going to justify my behavior? Like, how am I going to do this? So I decided that I was going to be like a feather in the wind. You know, if you're nice to me, I'm okay, I'll be nice to you. Oh, wait, you're going to be nice to me? Well, then I'll go to you, you know? So I had to figure out how to play somebody like that, because I would have picked Gary. You know, that's where my heart was. So, like, it was to pick Rick, I had to figure out, like, how to do that without being, you know, without you hating me. You know what I mean?
Right.
It was not easy.
You had to convince yourself to convince the rest of us.
Yeah, it has to be real. You know, it has to be real. You act, you have to play it real. I mean, that's how I was, you know, I saw it. I think any good acting has to come from a real place. It doesn't mean you have to live that life, but it does mean you have to understand it, and you have to emotionally connect to it in some way. Mm-hmm. That's how I play my roles. So that part, that film, I had broken up with my first relationship. My boyfriend and I broke up, and it was so heart-wrenching. And that film was an ode to my first love. That was like, you know, I loved him, but I just couldn't be with him. And that was really, that was a heavy movie. And I had my, you know, a lot of my heart in that film. It was really sweet.
It was a lot deeper than, it wasn't just a teenage sex comedy. It was much more than that. There was a lot to it.
Yeah, that's what I think is so cool about the film is that, you know, people will always say, oh, Last American Virgin. I mean, that's just like a sex romp.
Yeah.
But you have to say no, you have to see it, and then you'll understand. And you won't understand until you see it.
Yeah, I mean, you touched on a couple of, especially the, you know, the whole abortion issue. I mean,
yeah.
Talking early 80s, and you're talking about, you know, you're dealing with abortion, and Fast Times at Ridgemont High went in the same direction, but it's not a subject you tread lightly on. And I think it was well done, and there was definitely a message there. So,
well, the Fast Times to me was the American version sort of, and the, you know, the mm-hmm. Last American Virgin was like the European version. But
oh, right.
You know, Fast Times, when that abortion scene happened, that was very sad. That was a very sad through line, and it was sort of like all these, you know, upbeat cheerleader kind of fun, upbeat things were happening. But,
and then boom.
Yeah, and then the abortion yeah. was like very down. With Virgin, it was upbeat, but then there was, the abortion, it was, you know, like, it was like a fantasy. It was like male fantasy. Like the end was like with the abortion. Do you know what I mean? It was upbeat. Like he brings oranges in the Christmas tree and you're like, what is happening? And I'm smiling. Yeah. That's sort of like not real. But the thing that Last American Virgin did is it is a time capsule of the 80s in music. If you don't know the 80s, you watch it for music, for the hairstyle, for the style of the clothes, for the subject matter, the cocaine, abortion. The nudity, the drugs, like just drinking, underage kids drinking. It is surprisingly, you watch it and you go, yeah, that's what, and the kids, all the kids in our movie, there are no adults. It's all basically, I mean, you see Gary's parents a little, but it comes from the perspective of these kids are acting like they're adults, right? Like,
or dealing with adult matters.
Yes,
or trying to deal with it, yeah.
Yes, and that's what it felt like in the 80s. It really felt like you did handle things. If there's something, you handled it. You didn't go to your mom and dad, really. You did it. You know, it's just a different head, I think, than maybe today.
Yeah, you couldn't just Google online community and you know, get help. You just had to trudge through it.
Yeah.
Times have changed, that's for sure.
Yeah, you're right. You couldn't. You have to, like, talk to, you know, do you trust somebody? You know, that's very true. There was no internet. There was no way to, you know, get help or, you know.
Yeah, different times.
Kids were a little tougher, I think, in a way. Not to say kids aren't tough now. It's different, but it was more isolation. There wasn't this way of contacting other people so easily.
Right.
I still wonder. I still try to figure out
for like hours.
Yeah, I still try to figure out like how we were able to communicate so quickly and meet up with other friends. Like we didn't have cell phones. Yeah. We didn't have the technology that we have now. We couldn't just text somebody and say, hey, meet us at you know wherever in 20 minutes. You know, you had to actually make an effort to
go to the phone,
be somewhere,
wall.
Yeah, exactly, be near a phone that was on a wall and pick it up and dial a number. And you know, there was, you might have had this phones that had the speed dial on a few numbers,
maybe,
but not
you
all
had
your
to
phones.
Memorize them. You had to
try remembering your 500 and some odd contacts that you have in your phone now, right?
Yeah.
Or however many it is, you know, 500 plus. So yeah, that's, yeah, it's anyway.
It's great. It's just, I'm really happy that I have been alive long enough to see the changes that have happened,
mm-hmm.
you know, going from a time where, you know, people have said to me like, you know, Virgin. I mean, look, when I did Virgin, we didn't even think it would come out because we didn't know at that time, only really big things came out, you know, Officer and a Gentleman, you know,
mm-hmm.
only big films got, you know, got distribution. We had no idea. We thought, well, maybe we'll do this, but it's probably going to be released in, you know, like China, you know, for like, you know, a month. I mean, it is phenomenal that it is still out today and that people can still watch it.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal. Because it's not a given.
And even in the early 80s, it wasn't like, oh, this is going straight to VHS. You know, they didn't have that mentality yet.
They didn't even have VHS. That's the thing. It was when Virgin was put out, there was no VHS yet.
Not like people commercial, not available the way it was in the mid 80s. Yes,
exactly. Right. Yeah. I mean, there might have been VHS at companies, but you didn't have your own VHS. It was when college students, or when it started a little bit mid 80s, was when that started to happen. But early 80s, no. You had to go to the movie theater to see a film. And you had to show your card because it was rated R. and not M. It was rated R, which meant restricted. You couldn't go unless under 17 without a parent.
And that was before G-17, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had to show my own ID. Actually, when I went to see Amityville, I had to show my ID to get in the theater to watch myself. Is what made it R. And I remember saying to the person, you have no idea, but I actually am the person who made this R. It was really funny.
Yeah, actually,
like,
yeah.
Okay. It was super weird. But,
it was an awkward scene, but it definitely is the scene that made it the R version.
Yeah.
Well, there was some scary stuff in there. That was a great movie. It was very creepy and well done. And like I said before, that was one of my favorite roles that you were in. So
Amityville, by the way, for the audience who doesn't know, there is incest in the movie. Incest. So
yeah.
If you don't know the subject matter, it's scary, but it's also creepy, you know?
It's weird.
And it's kind of in a weird, it's not that realistic, but it's got enough realism to make it creepy. It's creepy. That's what I've been told.
The thing about it, though, is because it's dealing with, like, you know, I mean, we all know that Amityville Horror is really a ghost story or demonic possession of a house, and that carries over, and that's what kind of puts your character in this position. So we're not talking about spoilers here. This movie's, you know, a few years old, but still, it's there's something about. Just because it was the weird thing with the brother and the sister, but overall it portrayed just a really creepy whole over sense of the movie because it was possession, you know.
Yeah.
It was about
and you
possession.
Know this,
so
to this
the
day,
person was
yeah. Yeah, I mean, even in the actual Amityville house, honestly, you know, there are some houses when you go in you get a weird feeling. You just get a weird feeling. It's a feng shui thing. It's like things are off. And that Amityville house originally was built on a piece of property that was too small for its for the house. And so they built the house with the front door facing the side yard. And that's why it's so weird. It's such an off house. So what I found out since I did Amityville Murders now, and by the way, Amityville the Possession, the storyline that happens to me at the beginning is that takes place in the house. Amityville Murders stays in the house, and it is the same story essentially, not everything, but it's about the abusive family. And so this new movie takes place completely in the house, which I love. I personally think it's like the best one because we stay in the house and we stay with the tension and the family, and I think it's more relatable to people. But the thing that's interesting I found out is that there were other murders that happened after the DeFeo murders. Like the DeFeo murders happened, then the Lutzes moved in, they left because they felt it was haunted, but then there was murders after that, like death or suicides that happened in that house. So that house is a history of a bad feeling that can be, you know, associated to affect people in there. So it's just, I don't know, I think some people are more sensitive to it than others. A little. There you go. I kind of always leave that sort of open.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're back on this dark note again. Let's move on.
I know.
Okay,
No, actually, I've got no segue whatsoever for something that I'm going to ask you, but this could be kind of fun. First off, for peanut butter, do you like creamy or crunchy? And I'll explain in a minute.
All right. I will have to say creamy.
Okay. And the reason why I think this would be a fun little thing to ask you about was that in past conversations that we've had, Scott and I and a few other guests, we go into this thing where we start labeling things as creamy or crunchy. And what it stemmed from was a past show Scott had referred to a guitar sound, specifically around heavy metal, as being a crunchy
Joan
sound.
Jett. It's from Joan Jett.
Oh, that was the Joan Jett episode. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, and then so you brought up the fact of, you know, this crunchy guitar sound, and that's the way you described it. And so we just had fun with this concept of applying creamy or crunchy to just whatever it is that we're talking about.
Okay, I'm totally in. I can ride that wave.
Okay. So I'm just thinking, if we pick on your movies that you've done, you know, your big ones.
Yeah.
How about each of us label that as either creamy or crunchy?
Creamy or crunchy, right. And defining it as just how we just, whatever it means to us, right?
Yes, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Perfect. Wow, you got it.
I am so there. You couldn't have asked awesome. A better person.
All right, so let's start off with Last American Virgin. What is that, creamy or crunchy to you?
Oh, hard.
And some of these are kind of hard because because it could go either way. You know, you go from the.
Oh no, I have to say crunchy.
Why?
Because it's not a smooth movie. It's not easy. It's upsetting. It's edgy. It's not creamy and smooth and easy and happy and all, everything's perfect. So I have to go crunchy.
Yeah, I've got to go with you for that exact same reason. It's not a easy journey for specifically Gary, who's, you know, kind of the main storylines following him. And I can relate to him in so many ways. And there's a lot of his, you know, like Scott had brought up, you know, around his dealings with the opposite sex that I can relate to and go, yeah, that just wasn't easy to go through, you know, back in the 80s. So yeah. Crunchy is definitely the way to go for me. Scott?
Bam. Scott?
I'm on board with you because this – I still think – like I – Last American Virgin, it had some funny parts, but it is a gut-wrenching emotional trap journey.
Yeah.
It really is. I mean, it's a lot deeper and harder to swallow than a lot of other, you know, movies that were based around teenagers at the time.
Exactly.
So definitely crunchy, just like
we got a three crunchy vote, three crunches.
Yeah, okay. three crunches on that one.
It's love it.
It's triple crunchy.
Triple crunchy. American Virgin. Remember cool. Those who haven't seen it.
So then, going chronologically, right. I guess Amityville 2 would be the next.
Gotta be crunchy, I guess. Gotta be crunchy. Same reason. Definitely yeah. not smooth.
Just because it's dark and yeah. it's not creamy. Kind of gives off the feeling of everything's like kind of copacetic and cool and all good. But crunchy, there's some crazy stuff going on, and I got
the nuts in there, and it's not.
It's extra crunchy.
It's extra crunchy.
Extra crunchy.
I'm with you on that. I mean, it's an Amityville movie.
Extra crunchy. I think that's he phrased that well. Extra crunchy.
All right. So then, I mean, I know that you've done other things in between, but I was just going to hit the big ones. So
I can bring up stuff too. So, but go ahead. What's your next one?
I was going Better Off Dead next.
I gotta go creamy.
Why creamy? Creamy
because it's fun, smooth ride on the K-12 down. You go down the hill, you're skiing down the K-12. And so I'm going creamy because it's super fun. And it's a
ride. Yeah, but I want my $2.
Yeah.
Well, that's true. Only the paperboy lives in the crunchy world, but I'm going to go creamy. Well, and of course, yes, I did have Ricky who drove me crazy, but yeah, I'm going creamy. I'm sticking with my creamy on that.
Okay. Scott, where are you at with that?
Well, I gotta agree. I mean, it's fun, it's smooth, and plus you have pure snow, 100% pure snow.
Right. Yeah.
The street value must be incredible, but
I love that one.
That's the guy fun. Gets the girl. Yeah. The guy gets the girl. It's everything ends up happier than, you know, he gets the girl that he didn't expect in the beginning, though. He was going after the other character who ended up, she was in Nightmare on Elm Street, right?
Amanda. She's the best. Okay. She's so talented. Love her.
Sorry, I can't always recall names.
Yeah, Amanda Wiss.
So, yes. Anyway, so he was originally interested in her, but he ends up with you, which is, it just ends up being a happier ending.
Yeah.
And it really is. It's creamy. It makes you feel good.
Yeah.
Feel good inside. Dave?
You know, having, you know, the part at the beginning where he's dealing with the breakup, you know, with
Dave.
Yeah, it just it,
Dave,
what's it gonna be?
I want
to say I'm leaning towards Crunchy just for kind of what his evolution was. He had to evolve as a guy that had that relationship that he was obsessed with her, and then mm-hmm. you know, but then again he was obsessed with something that before he really understood what he wanted from a companion.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, that's true.
I get how it turned creamy, but his journey at the beginning wasn't that, you know, it was crunchy, but most definitely.
Are you saying like slightly crunchy with a little bit of cream? Is this like what's happening?
Well, I've got to land one way or the other. I can't just leave it vague like that. So
right.
I'm going against the grain here. I'm going crunchy.
Okay.
Yeah.
We got two creamies and a crunchy. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. Two out of three on that one.
Okay.
Where are we at on the next one here? Bill and Ted's?
Yeah. Creamy because it's all good and excellent and fun. And yeah, there's some conflict, but the truth is this is a fun ride. We're going through time periods. We're traveling, you know, we're going to the past. We're going to the future. Everything ends up happy at the end. So, and the guys are smooth. So I say creamy. I say totally creamy.
By the way, out of those two guys, Alex and Keanu, which one was the most fun to work with?
Oh my gosh, both of them. That's really a hard question. They're both so adorable and so cute together. They didn't separate. They were like, you know, two peas in a pod. They were completely connected and they worked off each other really well. And they were both really respectful and just lovely.
So off camera, they still had a great relationship off camera as they did on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was so lucky to work with Keanu before he did all the Matrix movies. That film, could you imagine? He was the best boyfriend ever in that film. I mean, he was the best. He was like, dude, princess, would you know? I mean, that is the best. He was just adorable.
Well, he's the ladies' man.
Yeah, he really is. But he was the ladies' man, and both of them were just so great. So I'd have to say both of them. But, yeah, definitely creamy.
I'm with you on that one. I'm definitely team creamy for Bill and Ted's. That it's just a fun ride, and just their outlook on everything in life. They roll with the punches, even though they have some challenges to get through, but they just have fun with it, and they have fun with each other, and they make the most of, you know, the worst situations. So I love it. Scott.
I'm going against the grain on this one. I'm thinking crunchy, and for a different reason.
Yeah, let's
hear it. Air guitar.
It is about the air guitar, and they
because
they are wild stallions, and stallions, the stallions are crunchy.
Yeah,
they play some mean guitar.
Yeah,
well, they learn to eventually, so that's why I'm going.
Yeah, there's nothing soft about them. I get that.
No, that's where I'm going with the crunchy.
I respect
See,
that.
And that's where, when you said that it's whatever that means to you for that specific idea, like that crunchy or creamy, that you summed it up so well, because that's why I feel this way about this movie.
Thank
That's great. Yeah. You have another challenge? Okay.
Yeah, I have a challenge for you, this one. Okay, but yes, this is it. Terrorvision. Have you, either of you, seen Terrorvision?
I have not.
No.
Okay, I'm going to tell you about Terrorvision. And there's a little homework. There's a thing you can watch that you haven't seen.
I do homework.
I'm not good with it.
Well, you'll enjoy it because it's not hard to watch. It's a feel-good movie. I'd have to say it's creamy, but it's got a bit of crunch in it. It is a movie that was done 1980. I think I did it in 80.
It says 86.
86, I was going to say so. 86. And it is, I play a punk rocker named Susie Putterman. It is a parody. It is a horror parody of a monster that comes out of a TV and eats people. It's the best late night movie with popcorn. Hang with your friends, and watch this movie. You will remember the lines. It is like the most laid back, chill kind of movie to watch. And the thing that's so interesting is it was done in the 80s, but it was a parody of the 80s. So when it came out, nobody got that it was a parody of the 80s. They thought, well, this is just like an over the top movie, but it was a live action cartoon. It was stylized. We all knew we were playing caricatures, like cartoon characters, but it is so goofy. And I challenge you to watch it and tell me if it's creamy or crunchy. It's got Jonathan Grice, who was in Napoleon Dynamite, plays my boyfriend. He plays OD, Rika. My boyfriend, and he's a rocker. And I play Susie Putterman, and I have a machine gun, and it's like this.
And your hair is awesome.
My hair is the best. It's like Cindy Crawford.
I'm looking at some photo shots of it right now. It's great.
Right, it's super good. And for me, again, I have played the ingenue so long in my life that when I got that role, it was so much fun because finally I was getting, honest to God, I'm actually a very shy person. I'm so shy. But I learned as I got through my life to be more brave, say. But I'm actually a very shy person. But when I did Terrorvision, I so wanted to play this character. But I knew, most of the time, no one would cast me as that. They'd always cast me as the good girl or the ingenue. And so since I was a little older, I don't know, Ted Nicolai was a big fan of my work and he gave me the opportunity. So it is hilarious. So you got to go see Terrorvision, rent it, find it. It is definitely a feel good movie. It's really fun.
I'm just stuck on the hair. I'm looking at the pictures now. That's awesome.
Right? It's hilarious. It's so good. Monster tries to come out and eat you. And you know what? It was a real monster. It wasn't CGI. And so probably one of the last few monsters that we have. It was adorable and disgusting at the same time. So and the only reason I think it would have probably been a hit, except that it should have been rated, to me, PG-13. But the problem was when Ted did it, we shot it in Italy. And Ted said to the set designer, I want this to look like a pleasure palace. It was supposed to be sort of making reference to the fact that in the 80s, it was all about sex in the 80s. And the Italian designers put naked paintings of women on the wall.
And I see that.
And every single shot, you cannot get rid of it. You can't avoid it. So it had to be rated R. And we were like, really? Oh, my gosh. I can't believe it. So this would have probably been on what's the show that they make comments about Mystery Science Theater. It probably would have been a Mystery Science Theater had not those pictures been there. So sad. I wish it was. But now people believe
that would be a fun one.
Yeah, right.
That would be a fun Mystery Science. Yeah, Mystery
Science Theater. It's great. It's the perfect Mystery Science Theater. And I'm a big fan of that. So I back it.
All right. So, well, I will have to find it and try to watch it.
Also, I must tell everyone, if you want to stay connected with me. My daughter and I have a YouTube channel show. It's called Live, as in Olivia, and Die, as in Diane, in LA. So if you go to YouTube and you look up Live _ and Die _ in LA, that's us. And we have a little show. So you can connect there, or, you know, connect with me on Twitter, Diane Franklin 80. And also on Facebook, you'll see like two black and white photos of me for my books. Because I do a lot of stuff at 80s. I might be like even at the Microsoft Theater in January, introducing bands. There's like an 80s convention, 80s weekend. So I do a lot of fun things. So just stay connected to me.
Can you tell us your YouTube, what is that again? Live underscore.
Live underscore and underscore die, D-I, in LA. And that's on YouTube. It's our YouTube channel. I live and die in LA. And
okay.
Instagram, actress Diane Franklin. And Facebook, my Facebook got filled up, so the other one is Facebook is, you'll see Diane Franklin fans, I think it says. And you'll see a black and white photo. And then Twitter is Diane Franklin 80. So friend me. Come follow me. And I am hilarious and fun, and I have always something going on. Super.
I will say, you know, you have been like a great breath of fresh air, because you're so energetic. You give off this such a great positive energy, and I'm not usually like I'm not like somebody that says that. That's so not me. You know, I mean, I just don't say that kind of thing, but you really are. You're like really, you're fun to listen to talk. I mean,
I appreciate
that. You seem like you're just having a good time. You're just having a good time in life. That's great.
And I do. The one thing I have to say, which is my weird thing, is I talk a lot because, like, again, I'm shy, but I talk a lot because I want to make sure that I get everything in. And sometimes I I feel like, oh, maybe we don't have enough time. And but I do have, good energy, and I like to have fun. I'm a fun person. So there you go. I mean, what can I say? And I also am very supportive of my other friend actors and actresses. I really like to promote their stuff. I believe in them and I think they're great. And I'm just so grateful to be in the business and to have acted and to still be acting. I just think it's amazing. I mean, it's crazy. And how fun is it? Like, I know when I had my crushes, and then for them to be in conventions or for them to be on the air or like talking, I would have been so excited to hear them. So I think I just never forgot that. I don't forget what it's like to be the audience. You know?
Yeah, to be the fanboy, if you will.
Aw, well, I like that. go on, more. I'm a baby.
All right, so you already gave your credentials for everybody to follow. Is there anything else that you wanted to tell us about before we close?
I love these guys. They are wonderful. I've had the best time, and thank you so much for having me on. That is all.
You've been more than generous with your time, and as Scott said, just super friendly and awesome and energetic. We totally get the fact that you enjoy everything, that the opportunities that you've had, and it's just a wonderful journey for you, and it's so great that you're sharing that with your kids. I get that. I heard that predominantly on the, you know, during the conversation. You know, as, you know, not just, you know, it's your journey, but now you're kind of passing it along as a mother. And I think that's wonderful. I think it's very important for kids to learn to pursue their passions. And I think that's what they're getting.
Because you're older. Yeah, you don't have to. Also, I think it's really important that, okay, like I'm very supportive of my husband, and I are both really supportive of our kids going after their dreams. And some kids may not have that, but that doesn't mean you have to give up on yourself. You know, I always say there are three directions a child can go in, and that is what they want to do, what their parents want them to do, and what they're gifted at. And those may be three different directions. Maybe you'll do one of those. Maybe you'll do two. Maybe you'll do all three in your life, you know. But don't forget, what you're gifted at sometimes is what people will pay you for because it comes easy to you. But that doesn't mean you can't pursue what you want to do. And I think a lot of times people think that growing up is giving up. And that's like, no, it doesn't mean you give up your fun. It doesn't mean you give up your smile. It doesn't mean you give up your goodwill. It just means that, you know, you have to focus, you know, get your things done, but don't lose your happiness, right? Do not. It's not, no one has the right to take that from you. It's really important.
Agreed. So
there you go. So be excellent to yourself. How's that?
Oh, wonderful message. Scott, do you have anything?
No, I'm, this has been, I've had a great time.
Yay!
you've been an amazing guest, and it's so fun to have people.
Will you tell me when, send me the link so I can send
Oh, yeah, once it's up, Dave, when do you think this will be on? Either next week or the week after?
Probably the week after. We're probably okay. Looking at, I would say, probably the 3rd. December 3rd.
Well, good. If it's going to be up then tell people also my books are on Amazon. And if you buy them, then and you friend me, so like find me on one of my social media, I will sign it for free. Even wow. If you come to a convention, I'll sign it free if you buy my book. So you got, or books, you can buy both of them. So just letting the people know that if you do that and then you find me on social media, I can either give you an address or you can come to a convention and bring it to me and I'll sign it for free. So there you go. Merry Christmas.
Which one would you recommend reading first?
Well, the first three? Book is about my career in general.
Okay.
And it's like everything. But my second book it's got more photos from every film, but it also has, it's more about Last American Virgin, I would say. I think they're both really amazing books. And I forgot to tell you one last thing. I am doing a third book. And my third book is going to focus on Better Off Dead. And it'll be coming out maybe around 2020. And I go to these conventions and I always bring the actual coat that I wore from Better Off Dead to these conventions. So if you go to the convention and you take a picture wearing the coat, I will put you in my book. So anybody who's ever worn this coat in the last 10 years or so of me doing these conventions, you send me the photo and I'm going to create this book. And it's going to have like really in-depth chapters on the characters, all the different characters, Paperboy and, Ricky and, Lane and like all the, each character. And if I can get them, to do their own, like I contacted Savage Steve Holland, who's going to do my foreword. So, it's going to be a beautiful book, a labor of love. So, the international language.
Is there any other props that you've got to keep other than the coat?
That one I have like a vest. I don't think, I used to have the ski outfit, but I don't know if I still have that. I don't know if I have it, but I do have only the coat. Even the hat I have is not the real hat, but the coat is. So it is definitely a collector's item and super cool. So that book is going to be called The Excellent Coat of the Last American French Exchange Babe of the 80s.
Don't ever shorten those books. Bam, the book titles.
That's
yeah.
It. Whatever changes it now. Yeah.
All right. So it sounds like we're wrapping this up. So just as I like to remind everybody at the end of these things, be excellent to each other and have a good whatever, because we have no idea when you're going to listen to this.
Woohoo!
Bye.
Be excellent to each other.
We could throw in a party on dudes there.
This has been a Bonsai Retro Club production.
Bonsai Danielson!
Hey, Bonsai!
Bonsai!
Bye!